You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Did we settle on a poll question, McLovin?
Yeah, we asked which team should stick with their current quarterback. Mm-hmm. Not who will, but who should. The 49ers, mm-hmm. the Jets, mm-hmm. the Falcons, and I put the Patriots in there with Cam because of the rumors that they could deal for Jimmy G.
I'm just wondering what the Jets do, because nobody thinks that they're not taking Zach Wilson. At what point do you lose the leverage of trading Sam Darnold? Before the draft, I guess, or do you wait till after the draft to see how teams fared in the draft? Chris Sims here to answer all those questions, Pro Football Talk Live co-host. Let me start with the obvious one. What does it mean to be a Kyle Shanahan quarterback, Chris?
Well, I think when you talk about a Kyle Shanahan quarterback, you're talking about a guy who can process his information, you know, at a really quick rate, knows where to go with the football off of that decision making, and then has the athleticism to run the boots and the play action passes. But I think more than anything, it's being able to take in the clues of what Shanahan can deliver to you as a quarterback, and go, listen, I'm a mad scientist. I've got us in this formation, and I know they're going to play one of these two defenses. If you just listen to me and read this guy on this play, I'll get A and B open. You just got to read this guy and take to my coaching. And I think that's what really Kyle Shanahan looks for at the quarterback position more than anything.
It looks like you doubled down this morning on Mac Jones. You tweeted out, Kyle Shanahan gets the most out of quarterbacks who trust his system, make the right reads. Matt Schaub, 2009, passing champ. Kirk Cousins in Washington. Matt Ryan, 2016 MVP. Mac right. Jones is an ideal quarterback for that mold, more on par with Matt Ryan. Now, is this a report or an opinion?
No, this is an opinion.
Okay.
You know, listen, Kyle's a really good friend. There's no doubt. He's not sitting here telling me his draft plans and what he thinks he's going to do at number three or
have
what
you asked him, though, Chris?
No, I have not flat out asked him. I text him things, Dan, like, congrats on the move, you know, way to go, happy, you know, hope it all went the way you want. That's where that conversation goes. Now, like, I'm a good friend. We talk about football a lot, and I would be shocked if I didn't have a pretty good feel for what he likes at the quarterback position.
Okay, but you've been tweeting, Chris.
Yeah,
has
right.
Kyle Shanahan commented on your tweets?
No, he has not.
Okay.
He is, and nor do I think he's probably oblivious to anything I've said or wrote on social media or anything like that. But you know, this is, you know, 20 years of me knowing a guy that, yes, I talk a lot of football with all of the time, mm-hmm. right? We talk about quarterbacks a lot, off season, regular season, whatever it may be. And I would just have a hard time thinking it's not Mac Jones at number three. I really would. One, because of what Shanahan likes. And then two, you know, yeah, I'm taking it into, you know, I think Zach Wilson's the number one quarterback in the draft, but I still think Trevor Lawrence is going to go to Jacksonville. I think the Jets will go to Zach Wilson now, totally 100% confirmed after that workout on Friday. And then when I look at it and go, all right, now Shanahan and the 49ers are at three. That, to me, is Mac Jones to make that move. We know it's a quarterback, but I just think Fields and Lance have work in front of them. There's some polish. There's some, you know, some things they need to work on, and you don't trade up nine spots to get a quarterback that has things to work on. That's why I think it's Mac Jones.
Okay, so what's Jimmy G's future?
I would think, I mean, they got two options. They could keep him, right? And then go, all right, we'll wait for Mac Jones to, you know, come along and give him a year on the bench. But I think, as I said to Mike Florio today, that's risky. The 49ers, you see them. They got a good team. They were in the playoff hunt last year with the most injuries in the history of the NFL. So you go with Jimmy Garoppolo and what? Go, you know, 12-4 or something like that? What does that do to your number three pick? So I would think ultimately that Jimmy G is put on the trade block and that Mac Jones would be the starter or whoever they pick at number three going into the 2021 season.
12-5, maybe, because there's 17 games.
Oh, you're right. I got to get used to that.
I do, too. I used to say 7-9, 8-8. If all goes well, 9-7. I got to change all of that, Chris.
Oh, man, you're right.
Okay, what do the Jets do? At what point do they lose their leverage here in trying to get something for Sam Darnold if they're taking Zach Wilson?
Right. I heard you. I heard you say that before I came on. That's a good question. I mean, you don't hurt your leverage as long as there's more than one team that can get involved in the conversation as far as trading, right? Right now, I can look at two teams to go, I think there's legitimate, and maybe there's three teams because we don't know. I don't think the Russell Wilson staying in Seattle is 100% yet. I think we should watch these final 5 weeks. But I look at Carolina and the Denver Broncos as two places where I still think are looking for a quarterback. I do. Carolina, I mean, hey, we know they've given us all the signals that they're trying to find an upgrade from Teddy Bridgewater. You know, the Denver Broncos, I'd be hard-pressed with Vic Fangio, his butt probably on the line. You're just going to roll out the red carpet and go, I'm going down with Drew Lock. I wouldn't. I'd at least have somebody there to compete or, okay, he didn't play well the first 3 weeks. Here's another guy. So that would be the thing I would look at right now because, yes, I do think the Jets are going to go Zach Wilson and hopefully they can have a market for Sam Darnold and get what they see is worth for him.
So if we have quarterbacks going 1-2-3, why not 1-2-3-4 with Atlanta?
A lot of people think that. There's a lot of people in the NFL that think Atlanta's hot on Trey Lance and might take him number four. I mean, again, I wouldn't do that. I would not. You know, I've discussed with you a little, I think, with Trey Lance. There is some elite traits. There's no doubt. I mean, his speed and his arm strength are wow. But there's a lot of other things that I question. And that, to me, doesn't scream the number four pick. But I think if you talk to a lot of people in the know around the NFL, they think Atlanta's hot on Trey Lance. And, you know, again, I'm never going to be mad at a team if they think that's their guy and they're sold on that.
Yeah.
To me, I would just go, what are you sold on quite yet there? He didn't play last year. He didn't throw a lot the year before. And there's some things in the throwing that I would say I just don't feel 100% comfortable with right now, too.
And you still think Zach Wilson is going to be a better pro than Trevor Lawrence?
I do, yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, we talk about the pro day, right, on Friday. I mean, it was wowing. The degree of difficulty of those throws and then the way in which he passed the test was wowing. Not to say other quarterbacks can't do that. I get that, you know, but here's the thing. This is where people are missing this. They're going, you know, I hear some people, well, it's a workout. Who cares? It's no big deal. Well, first thing I would say is when the film matches the workout, then you go, oh, okay, wait, there's something there. I see all these throws on film, and now he does it in a workout and does it easily. Second of all, there's maybe more pressure to doing it in that environment than there is a game. A game, you're reacting. You're doing what you have to do. At a workout, you're basically putting yourself out there. You know, and you miss four or five of those throws, and all of a sudden you go, whoa, you know, I'm trying to be cool and do these high-level throws, and here I've thrown five or six incompletions, and that can, you know, snowball out of control. But this guy's so good, they just went, nah, it ain't going to happen. It doesn't matter. If it was so easy, why doesn't everybody do this at their pro day, right? That's where I want to say. So there was great confidence that even on his worst day, they felt like he could still pass it with flying colors. And I think that's what maybe people are missing. Not to say it translates to definite awesomeness. I know you got to play the game on the field, but that still was an awesome workout.
Talking to Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk Live co-host with Mike Florio. Yeah, but I'll go back to Zach Wilson. You know, that's the impact of Patrick Mahomes. That workout was to say, this is the new quarterback. Mahomesian throws. That's right. What Zach Wilson did. He gave you Mahomesian throws.
I agree. It's the Mahomes effect. It's the Mahomes, the Rodgers. You know. I feel like Mahomes affected Josh Allen, you know, and now you're going to see, more and more of these quarterbacks trying to be this type of football player. You know, one, because the game's wide open right now in a lot of ways. The quarterbacks are as talented as we've ever seen. And what it really shows, and like we see with Mahomes on the field, and I think what Zach Wilson's showing you is going, hey, yeah, I can hit the open curl and the open out route, But look, when it's third and 14 and we're not playing our best, look what else I can do. Oh, the pass protection's not good or nobody's open. Look, I could still get it done, guys, even when things aren't perfect. And I think you're totally right. That is the Mahomesian effect. And I would think as the years go, we're going to see more and more of these type of workouts and quarterbacks come up the ranks.
I also wonder about wide receivers here with Devontae Smith, Ja'Marr Chase, that it feels like I was told from 2 months ago, a scout said he liked Ja'Marr Chase over Devontae Smith. Miami is now out of that position to take Devontae Smith at number three. Doesn't mean they still can't, but handicap those two. If you're the Bengals, do you reunite Ja'Marr Chase with Joe Burrow? And if you're Miami, are you still trying to reunite Devontae Smith with Tua Tagovailoa?
I mean, I'm thinking about it either way. And, you know, again, like you talked about, I think Miami, they did a great job of kind of putting themselves in a spot where you basically go, oh, they should get at least one of those two guys no matter what at number six.
Or Kyle Pitts out of Florida.
Or Kyle Pitts out of Florida, right, which is not going to be bad either. Yeah, you really have to make that pick going or make that trade going, wait, you know, there's three guys we like that we'll be happy with that are right there. You know, Devontae Smith and Ja'Marr Chase, I went into the process, Dan, thinking Ja'Marr Chase was going to be the clear number one. When I watched the film, I went, whoa, like that was, you know, I mean, like by a hair, I would take Ja'Marr Chase over Devontae Smith. It's like 1A and 1B. They're both really talented football players. I do wonder with the Bengals at five, you know, they have decent receivers, no doubt. They got Higgins at the top of the first round last year. You know, pass protection is a thing for them, too. Would they go O-line there? I don't know. It'd be interesting because they could add another weapon to the arsenal and be real scary that way. But I do think at least it assures that the Dolphins get a weapon there. And I don't think you can go wrong. You know, Dan, everybody talking about Devontae Smith, is he big enough and all that? I'd be concerned if the film showed me something like that. But, man, his strength, his route running, his feet, and then his just pure speed are so special that I don't see it being an issue.
Do you care about the size of a wide receiver as a quarterback?
I mean, like, throwing to a really small receiver down the field can be one thing that maybe you care about, right? Like the John Browns of the world. Sometimes throwing them a ball downfield when a guy's covered, that's not the most comfortable thing in the world. But after that, no, you don't really think about it a whole lot. Now, as you get to know these guys, you get to know what their radius is and where their window is, right? To where now you go, oh, wait, I'm throwing to that guy, and that guy can catch a ball if I throw it 5 feet behind him still. So let me be safe and put it there, and maybe he gets it or no one gets it. That goes through your process when you're throwing as a quarterback in the pocket, Dan.
Would you rather have a wide receiver in the top 10 or a tight end? Would you rather have Ja'Marr Chase or Kyle Pitts or Devontae Smith?
I would rather have the receivers. Okay. I would. Yeah. I mean, I like Pitts. They're great weapons, everything they do. Guys like Devontae Smith and Ja'Marr Chase are game changers. They're home run hitters. Oh, here's a reverse, 70 yards. Here's a slant, 70 yards. Oh, just run by that guy with pure speed, 70 yards. And then, you know, 50-50 balls with those type of guys are really like 70-30 type balls. So that's where I favor those guys.
By the way, Mac Jones was referred to as subtly athletic today. Not deceptively, but now he's subtly I think he's athletic for the position. I don't know what like is the context RG3 or is he's got measurables that are similar to Andrew Luck, and I thought Andrew Luck was athletic.
I agree. It's being way too over talked about, hyped up of a thing. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, no, he's not Mahomes or Josh Allen or RG3 or Lamar Jackson.
What was Mahomes' 40-yard dash?
You know what? I don't even know. I would guess it was 4.7s, low 4.7s, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I mean, was he deceptively athletic?
No, you know, and again, I'll look into it and go into it too to go, wait, you know, oh, it's one thing to say.
Wait a minute, hold on, Chris. What was Mahomes' 40?
4.8 40.
Ooh.
Oh, man, damn.
I wouldn't take him. I think I might have to pass on him.
Yep. The hell with that. The hell with it.
Mitchell Trubisky had a faster 40-yard dash.
Right. And there's nothing about that says Mitchell Trubisky is better in the pocket or avoiding people or doing anything like that. Again, it's like DeVonta Smith, Dan. It's like if the film showed me that there was issues there, I would go, ooh, yeah. But there's too many great plays of movement in the pocket, avoiding people, then making great throws, or just getting outside the pocket to buy enough time to throw a great ball on the run.
Yeah.
He's every bit as athletic or more athletic than Matt Ryan coming out and other quarterbacks like that. That's who he's going to be. It's not going to be Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or anything like that.
Good to talk to you, Chris. As always, we'll keep an eye. We love your predictions. And
thanks, man.
You know, but it's
Keep Fritzy off the cookies and cream, man. I mean, he can't be doing that. He can't. I've seen his belly. He can't do that. Come
no,
on.
Wow. It's a health bar. This is.
Oh,
I'm okay with this. Yeah.
Okay.
This is
okay.
Yeah, he used to eat actual cookies and cream, Chris. This is a protein bar.
It's when I ate three of the protein bars in one sitting. That's what the problem is.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, yeah, come on. Contain yourself. One's enough, Fritzy. Come on.
I'll do better.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
That's Chris Sims from Pro Football Talk Live every morning with Mike Florio. Take a break. Play of the day's next. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at FoxSportsRadio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you can get your podcast.
Our conversation with Seth Greenberg from the Mothership, brought to you by Capital One. What's in your wallet? Got an update on what the Niners were thinking of doing before they made the trade to move up to number 3. And it comes back to a situation that I told you about a while ago. I thought this was the direction they were going to take. So I have that for you coming up. But I have to get to Seth Greenberg, the former college coach, ESPN college basketball analyst, kind enough to join us on the program. Seth, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Give me the most surprising Elite Eight team.
It's got to be Oregon State. Now, it's funny because Oregon State's won 9 of their last 10, but, I mean, that's a team that came in basically sixth place in the Pac-12. That's a team that was picked to come in last preseason. That was a team that kind of reinvented themselves along the way, and it's a great story because Wayne Tinkle, the coach, you know, he had his son for 4 years, couldn't get to the NCAA tournament. His son graduates, and all of a sudden now they're in the tournament. But I think it's a great story. It's been fun to watch, and quite honestly, their team is playing really good basketball. Not pretty, but winning basketball.
The team that didn't advance that surprised you the most?
The team that didn't advance that surprised me most is probably Florida State. Florida State was a little bit of a conundrum for me because I look at Florida State and I see a team with length. I see a team that, you know, most times defends, didn't defend yesterday, obviously. Had a lot of different ways to beat you. I just thought their game plan yesterday was so different than what I expected. I expect them to attack Michael Smith on the block, posting up different guys because they have the versatility to do that. I thought defensively early on, you saw that you could not attack that ball screen by switching it. Michigan was exploiting it, creating matchups all over the floor. They never made a change there. So, I was disappointed in Florida State, maybe selfishly because I'm a big Leonard Hamilton fan, and I was hoping to see him get a chance to play in the Final Four because I think he has a special team.
How does Gonzaga lose?
If someone can get Timmy in foul trouble, you get Timmy in trouble, you got to make Timmy defend. I think that's really important. Certain things you got to do to beat Gonzaga. You got to take care of the ball. You got to take good shots. You got to have a four that can guard Kispert, and you've got to make Timmy defend. If you make Timmy defend, and that's why Michigan's an interesting matchup for them, and even maybe USC, but you know, Michigan especially, because if you make him defend and go at him, which Michigan can do with the way they play offensively, playing through him, you take him out. They don't have any really replacement for him. Now, look, they get a shot up every 14 seconds. They get the ball, and Kispert, every time he shoots you, you think it's going in. Suggs, I think, is the number one pick in the draft. They play with incredible flow. But I think that's the one way you can get after them is by playing through the post. And I'm really interested to see what USC does with their length and with the zone, their ability to cover, their ability to get some extra shots, their quickness. I mean, you're talking about a team that averages 50 points a game in the paint and a team in USC that allows the fewest points and is the best two-point percentage defensive team in basketball. That will be just kind of a game within the game that I think will be interesting to watch.
So you think Kispert's the number one overall pick instead of Cade Cunningham or Mobley?
I think Suggs is the number one.
Oh, Suggs, I'm sorry. So Suggs, yeah, number one pick, and Mobley, Cunningham in the mix there?
Yeah, I think I would go Cunningham second. I would go Mobley third or fourth. Here's my concern with Mobley, and I love him. And I love how hard he plays. I love the type of teammate he is. I love
– Do you need to get that phone call?
No, that's – well, you know, that's what happens in the home office. I don't have a fancy studio like you now. I'm just sitting in my office. Jake the Wonder Dog cannot answer the phone.
Is there anybody that you would stop the interview to answer? Like if Bill is called, would you answer?
No, I would actually ignore that for a long time. All I'm going to hear about is, you know, how the NCAA is messed up. We need to pay guys. Mark Emmert needs to go. I keep on telling Bills, Emmert's so bad, take the job. Everyone wants you to take the job. I said it would solve two problems for me. No, hey, Bills is the best. He's so much fun. He's so funny that he doesn't even realize he's funny sometimes.
He's passionate.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, everyone's got a cause. And, you know, this is something that's important to him. But I think USC, I wouldn't take Mobley ahead of Cade. I think the ball's in Cade's Cunningham's hand. Now, the one thing I don't – Cade Cunningham's not the athlete Grant Hill is. A lot of people compare him to Grant Hill. Mm. I don't see that. Now, I do see a lot of Jason Kidd and Jalen Suggs. That pass he threw with his left hand off that ball screen yesterday was out of this world. I also love his toughness. I love his leadership. I think his game just translates immediately into the NBA where he can be a winning point guard.
We're talking to Seth Greenberg from the Mothership. Indiana hires Mike Woodson. Not inspiring. He hadn't coached in college. I know there's, you know, the legacy there, being an IU player. But is Indiana Indiana? Does Indiana know that Indiana is not Indiana anymore?
No, I don't think they know. I don't think they know they're not Indiana anymore because they haven't been Indiana basically, you know, since Coach Knight left, really, if you look in terms of the consistency of competing for a national championship. Here's what I think. Mike Woodson will have no problem coaching college basketball, coaching X's and O's, putting guys in position to play to their strengths. The key is going to be, and look, Thad Matta is a nice move by the university. I don't know if that's Mike Woodson's hire or the university's hire, because if it's the university's hire, it's a bad move. Mike Woodson's got to have his own staff. Now, I would sit with Mike Woodson in the interview process and say, all right, coach, we have no concerns about you coaching, but there's a business of college basketball. You know, I don't know if he had kids that played grassroots basketball, but you better have someone who understands grassroots basketball. You better have someone who understands the transfer portal. You better have someone who understands just the day-to-day things you deal with as a college basketball coach. Now, Juwan Howard, his sons were heavily recruited. He understood grassroots basketball. He hired Phil Martelli to sit on his bench to kind of help him navigate, not coaching. I mean, because look, Juwan Howard, think about the apprenticeship he spent. Spoelstra, Riley, the coaches he played for. That's not going to be the issue. Mm. It's the day-to-day operation and dealing with the day-to-day static and minutiae and that goes around being a head coach in college. It's just different from the NBA. So I would, in the interview process, I'd say, hey, we got a guy that played for Knight. We got a guy that won championship. We got a guy that can galvanize a lot of the people that haven't been here. Coaching's not going to be the issue. NBA pedigree, NBA coaching experience, all the things young players are looking for today. What's your staff going to look like? Not, you're going to have Thad Matta, and Coach Matta is great. But handing him that guy to oversee him, he's a grown man. He's 63 years old. He's coached the best players in the world. Do you want a guy over your shoulder, basically, or do you want a guy that you chose to share this experience with at Indiana? So I think he'll hire a former NBA or a current NBA player development guy that wants to get in college. You would think he would hire another coach with college experience. Probably have someone involved that has ties to the university. But, you know, here's the thing. You're only as good as the players recruit and your players develop. And part of recruiting is evaluation. I think Indiana's going to go back to evaluating players that can play and win. Like I thought that, like Matt Painter's figured it out. Now, here's my question for everyone. What Matt Painter has done at Purdue, is that good enough for Indiana, how they perceive themselves now?
Yes. Yeah.
I think Indiana fans think they should be the Final Four. I think Indiana fans are similar, even though they haven't had success, to Kentucky fans.
Yeah, but Seth, they see those banners and then they think that somehow they're entitled and it doesn't work. You know, these kids don't go, gosh, I would love to play for Indiana because whatever. That's not the way it works. It's what's the style? Who's the coach? Who's going in there with me? Do we have a chance to win? And they might be there for 1 year, but that's, I just think that Indiana forgot who they were. And you know, I would have stayed with Tom Crean look, this is where they are. What about Texas? What's Texas going to do? Was Shaka Smart? Did he jump before he was pushed?
Yeah, I think he made the wise move. Look, Shaka Smart to me wasn't, as it developed, wasn't a good fit. Because Shaka Smart is a guy that lights up the room. Shaka Smart's a guy that coached this guy's hearts. Shaka Smart's, his DNA and the DNA of Texas in general just didn't fit. I think going back to Milwaukee, going back to his home state, going back to coaching the way he coached his VCU kids, going back to getting those type of kids. Like at Texas, you got to recruit the best player in Texas. You got to recruit the top five guys in the country. You got to recruit certain guys. Shaka Smart was better when he had Junkyard Dogs. Shaka Smart was better when, you know, they had played with a chip on their shoulder. I never saw the Texas team play with the passion and the energy that his VCU teams played with. So I would like to see him go back to his kind of his roots of what made him special as a coach. Now, guys that should take that job, look, Chris Beard's the number one guy. I go watch Chris's team's practice. I speak to his team. His energy is enthusiasm. But Chris Beard's situation and ownership in Lubbock might be far greater than the ownership of people in Austin. It's just a difference in the two communities. If I couldn't get Chris Beard, I would look at Eric Musselman. I would look at Bruce Pearl. I got all that money. If nothing, I'm getting those guys raises. But if I can get them, what do you need at Texas? You need someone to excite your fan base. You need someone to create ownership. You need someone that understands the use of social media. You need someone that understands a playing style that people are going to be excited to come watch. I would get the highest energy winning coach that I can find that can infuse a passion and an energy into the program moving forward.
When you were coaching, what's the best performance you ever saw?
In terms of my team?
No.
Or individual team? Best performance against us? The best performance, well, Hansborough, probably I wouldn't be talking to you right now if he didn't rebound a missed shot on a free throw and knock one in at the end of the ACC tournament. It's kind of personal to me, but the best performance I ever saw was those Jerry Tarkanian's UNLV teams. You know, we played them 2 and 3 times a year. That was, you know, Greg Anthony and Larry Johnson and Ackles and Anderson Hunt and Stacey Augman. They dominated the game, the speed that they played with offensively and defensively. They disrupted you, whether it was in their man, where they didn't let you run offense, or the amoeba. One of my favorite great stories of the stupidity of Seth Greenberg, and a lot of stories of the stupidity of Seth Greenberg, is my first year as a head coach, I invited the university president, President McCray, to sit on my bench for our first UNLV game.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it wasn't a good thing. We were down 30 at the half. I gave a great pregame speech. He was all in, and he was right there with us, down 30 at the half. First year head coach, I look at the end of the bench. We're down 30. Not only did I know we were losing the game, I thought I was losing my job. But I survived that, thank goodness. But that UNLV team was just different. Offensively, this Gonzaga team is just different.
Will they be viewed as one of the great teams of all time if they run the schedule here?
Yeah, they should, because so few teams have been able to do that, especially in recent history. Now, people are going to say, look, they play in the West Coast Conference. People are going to say, they are playing against a different group of players. I mean, think about it. I had this conversation with Jay Will today. You know, Jay Will's great Duke teams were juniors and seniors. You know, we have some good junior and senior teams, But the best teams in college basketball, or a lot of the teams in college basketball, are sophomore and freshman driven. The college basketball has gotten younger. Now, look, Villanova won with upperclassmen. Obviously, North Carolina the year they won one with upperclassmen. And it looks like Gonzaga or Baylor or Michigan can win with upperclassmen. Yeah, you can win with upperclassmen, but the very best dudes, the guys that you know are translating into the NBA and are killing it in the NBA, today those guys are all leaving before their junior years. So they're not playing against the same level. Yet I look at this team offensively, and it's just, as a basketball purist, it's beautiful basketball. The flow that they have, they don't reset. It's modern day basketball. It's got a little European tint to it in terms of the stylistic, but so does the NBA now. It's positionless basketball. The ball moves. It doesn't get stuck. They don't reset. You don't see a high ball screen with 10 seconds left on the clock. It's transition. Boom, the ball's moving. There's great spacing. There's random screens. There's random on and off the ball. It's just they are different. I do think that Michigan's got a shot at them, and I do think that Baylor's got a shot at them. I think those two teams have the greatest because Baylor's got the best backcourt in college basketball.
Seth, great to talk to you again, and good luck with Billis, okay?
I have no chance.
Thank you, bud.
I appreciate it, man.
That's Seth Greenberg from the Mothership. This interview brought to you by Capital One, What's in Your Wallet. We'll take a break. We'll give you our best and worst of the weekend right after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. He's now retired. He's now an analyst. He's a broadcaster. He's Drew Brees, who joins us on the program. Good morning, Drew. How are you?
Dan, I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. You're an analyst now.
Yeah, I guess that's the first time I've been introduced that way, so I just got to let that sink in for a second.
But former quarterback... That's weird.
I think the transition's pretty natural, you know. I think that you play long enough, which, man, I had the chance to play 20 years, right, quarterback in the National Football League. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd have that opportunity, certainly the opportunity to play that long. But you basically go from the way that you prepare for a game and then actually go out and execute that plan as a quarterback. And you now transition into a position where you're basically doing the same thing, but you're just, instead of actually doing it, you're talking about it. You're describing it. You're still studying film the same way. You're still anticipating what's going to happen, you know, based on what you're watching. And I think at the end of the day, this is a really fun opportunity, a great opportunity, for me to just show my love and passion for the game of football in a different way, and maybe a way that connects with fans even more, from the perspective that, you know, I want to make it fun. I want to make it educational and exciting.
All right, let me give you your first question as an analyst. Who should be the starter at quarterback for the Saints?
You know what? It'll be interesting. I think, however that, you know, competition is kind of laid out or plays out, I think both those guys, you know, have some unique skill sets. I'd say, obviously, Jameis and Taysom are different styles of quarterback. And whatever offense is run, I think you know, just like you would do for any quarterback, you make the adjustments within the framework of the offense to fit the skill set that you're dealing with, you know?
See, I would never let you get by if I was on Football Night in America with that answer.
Well, I really like both those guys. I think they both have the ability to be really good NFL quarterbacks. And so then it's just a matter of, hey, they just happen to be in the same place right now, you know? So we'll see how it plays out. But Taysom's proven he can win games. I think Jameis, you know, leaving Tampa, coming to us, spending a year in our system, I think he's developed a new level of confidence and ability to run our system. So it'll be interesting to see.
Did you realize the impact you had on Jameis Because he got really emotional when he was asked about, you know, being there in New Orleans with you.
Yeah, you know, that was, man, that was humbling. We had a great QB room. Like, man, we had a lot of fun together. I always took it as a great responsibility to help help young guys, help the guys that were in our room. I know that some guys maybe take a different approach. You know, maybe they look at it as this is the guy who's coming in trying to take my job, and so I'm not going to extend any help or advice or guidance. I took a very different approach because I knew how many veteran quarterbacks, as I was coming up, helped me and mentored me. And I can't tell you how much confidence that gave me and really how that helped guide me through my early years, you know, when I had some struggles. And so I've always kind of made it a commitment that if any young quarterback reached out to me or was in my room with the Saints, man, I was going to do everything I could to help them be the best that they could be. And I did. I tried to do that for Jameis.
Yeah, your first game, you came in and replaced Doug Flutie, I believe, right?
Yep.
Who was that Drew Brees back then? How different is he than this Drew Brees now?
Oh, man, light years. You know, what's amazing to me now, I mean, I've watched our offense evolve, right, with the New Orleans Saints from 2006 until now, you know, so 15 years of evolution. I mean, it is the complexities of what we are doing now are light years different than back then, my first year in the Saints offense. Like, I went back and looked at a call sheet from our very first game against the Cleveland Browns in 2006.
Give me an example here of what the call would have been back then.
Well, so for example, like the most basic formation, the most basic protection, the most basic play concept. Gun, red, right, 24 scan, Y Flutie. And by the way, that Y Flutie, that's a concept that everybody in the NFL runs. But when I was with the Chargers, it was one of Doug Flutie's favorite plays. So we nicknamed it Flutie because we were starting to transition to some no-huddle stuff and we needed code words. So we code-worded a concept, Flutie. And we were the first ones to do that because Doug Flutie was on our team. Well, then you have coaches that end up going to different places, you know, from there and taking that terminology.
Yeah.
So I'd be willing to bet there's probably about 6 to 8 teams in the league that actually run Flutie and call it Flutie. So it's funny how those things just kind of spread.
But, give me the most complicated call you ever had.
Well, so it'd be like, all right, so boogie to green left, slot, let's go X short tight, pass 37, buster nudge, Y Flutie sting, Z spear, kill, 53 tight and left. So, like, the terminology can be endless, you know. And here's the worst part is that – so that's that play call. And now you're in a loud stadium, and let's say the headset cuts off after the coach says, boogie to green left, right? Like, you don't realize how often that stuff happens, you know. And then play clock's going down, and you just have to – I mean, you are, like, thinking on the fly. You're having to just pick up, you know, bits and pieces and put it all together. And, oh, by the way – maybe it's a different personnel group in the huddle. You know, that was such a specific thing. And somebody, you know, tweaked an ankle and now they're on the sideline. Another guy's in and you're getting him coached up on what his split is. It's a -2 split. It's not an outside edge split. Man, there's so much stuff is happening and so fast that, man, it's kind of a free-for-all at times. But, man, that's what you love about the game. It's what makes it fun and exciting. Never a dull moment.
What'd you keep from your last game?
What's my what?
What did you keep from your last game?
What did I keep?
Yeah, uniform, everything, play sheet.
The memories of my kids on the field after the game probably was the most significant part of that. So nothing tangible, you know, from like a jersey or cleats or anything like that. It's not like you just wake up one day and say, oh, I think I'm going to retire today. You know, I mean, that's a process. You know, it's a couple year process that you begin thinking about how how that's going to happen.
And you knew before that game started, if you lose to the Buccaneers, that that's your last game.
Well, I knew it was my last home game, you know, because we were going to go on the road and play in the playoffs and, the Packers and hopefully onto the Super Bowl. But so I knew it was my last home game. You know, there was significance with that anyway.
You didn't want to leave the field though with Brady. Did it help in any way that you, if you're going to lose a game, you lose to Brady, or is that the last person you want to lose to?
Well, I didn't want to lose, period. You know, I mean, considering that you're playing against a guy like him who I have a great relationship with, and you know, we go way back, you know, we played against each other in college, right? And so we've kind of been on this journey, you know, together in a lot of ways. You know, we've kind of share one of the same mentors. So, I mean, just a ton of respect. You know, I think any quarterback in the NFL, only those guys can really understand what it takes to play that position and all the preparation and the just the time and the attention to detail and the headspace that takes up, you know, during the course of a season. But yeah, I mean, it's, I've had the chance to play against him a lot of times, 3 times this year, you know, so that's, we've got a great relationship, and obviously we know what kind of a player he is.
Drew joins us on behalf of Copper Compression, the number one bestseller on Amazon in the personal care category. Are you going to be in the backyard throwing footballs with fellow Hall of Famers here soon?
Yeah.
Are you on the other team? Because Favre gets Jerry Rice, and I never understood that. Like, that's not fair.
I was going to say this would be like the battle of the copper compression products, you know. But I need to go choose my receiver.
Yes.
He chose Jerry Rice. That's a pretty good one. I'm gonna have tryouts. I'm gonna conduct the copper compression tryouts. I'm gonna pull some guys, you know, pull some guys out of their living rooms and have a combine, Drew. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's gonna be like a mini combine. I gotta choose my wide receiver from history to take on Brett Favre and Jerry Rice and then the random guys that are, you know, just in the park.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Tom from UPS is out there. I feel bad for him. Tom from UPS is out there trying to cover Jerry Rice. I mean, it's just not fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, you just take away the inside. That's what I would do. That's my advice. Just take away the slant and then have somebody play over the top.
How many broken ribs did you have? And are they all healed now?
Yeah, I believe they're all healed. I had 11. I had 8 on the left side, 3 on the right. But I didn't even know you had that many ribs.
I didn't either. I didn't know either. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a crazy deal. I obviously never felt anything like that. And yet at the same time, it wasn't, I mean, it sounds crazy. Your mindset is such that, man, nothing's going to take you off the field, you know? So you don't even recognize the severity of anything because you're pushing through. And the 8 that I fractured on the left side were in the second Tampa game. It was the Sunday night game at Tampa. Second quarter, I kind of get slammed to the ground on the left side, and I knew something was wrong. I mean, it was a feeling I hadn't had. You know, the wind gets knocked out of you. That happens a lot. But all of a sudden, I felt like, man, I'm having trouble breathing. I can't rotate. Man, I had a hard time throwing the ball in the second half of that game. I mean, it was functional. We got the job done. But, you know, we win that game big. But I know something's wrong. I wake up the next day, go to the MRI, got all these broken ribs, and it's like, all right, well, let's just find a way to get to Sunday. I mean, that's really the saying amongst all NFL players, you know, find a way to get to the next game, you know. And so, man, training room, rehab. I didn't practice much that week. I just tried to get ready to practice on Friday that week and I was in so much pain on Friday. And so I was like, God, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And so got out on Sunday and, you know, felt actually decent going into that next game, which was against the Niners. And then sure enough, in the second quarter of that game, I get thrown down on the other side, and that's what fractured the three ribs and then punctured the lung. And that was – so it's one thing to have all that going on one side of your body, but then to have it on both sides. The problem at that point was as that game progressed, I mean, I finished the half, and we took the lead. I felt like we had the game in hand. But when you sit at halftime for 25 minutes and then come back out, man, I couldn't rotate. I couldn't do anything. So I basically went to Sean and like, man, I can throw the ball like 15 yards right now. That's about it. So, you know, I think in my mind too, I was thinking, all right, I know this is going to put me out for a period of time. I could go out there and make this thing worse, or I could just shut it down. Let's win this game, which I felt like we would anyway, and then try to make it back as quick as I could.
Well, you don't have to worry about that now. I don't think if you get any kind of rib damage, it'll be just from your kids hugging you, right? The only ribs will be on the Traeger grill.
That's exactly right. Those are the only ribs I'm worried about right now, and how I'm seasoning those babies before I smoke them.
Hey, congrats. Good luck with Copper Compression, the number one bestseller on Amazon in the personal care category. Play nice with Brett Favre and company. And then good luck on Football Night in America.
That's right. Copper Compression is going to help keep me young. I can sling it around in the yard of these future Hall of Famers I got running around this house.
And your kids, yeah. Oh, that's what you mean, yeah. Future Hall of Famers. Hey.
Did you pick up on that one, Dan?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. It took me a little while. That's why I played quarterback as a freshman in high school. That was as far as I got.
I love it. All right, man. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you, bud. That's Drew Brees. Yeah. I thought he was talking about future Hall of Famers out in the backyard, and I didn't realize he was talking about his kids. Yeah. A little slow. That's all right.